Welcome to IT Live, y'all. Brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Ian was getting his temperature settings adjusted to where he can perform his best on this show. We like to be optimized. Good morning, Ian. We are going to discuss what you do want to hear and don't want to hear for the offense and the defense. Ian was able to, he's going to sort through some of the cliches so you know what is valuable to you in spring practice reporting. And then we got Joe Cook, the powerful Joe Cook, coming on at the end of the show. He's going to break down what he saw at Pro Day for you that were not able to watch it on SEC Network. Good morning, Roaster. Good morning, AR. Ian, would you like to start with offense or would you like to start with the defense?
What does better in the algorithm?
Generally, you want to hook in early. So you would probably want to do offense up first to keep the audience most engaged. Would you like to go that route then?
But is the audience all here? Should we start with defense until everybody straggles in?
Well, the value of the live is most of the viewership doesn't actually come from the live. So most of your views come after whenever it publishes as regular video. So therefore, they're going to be there no matter what. And you want to start with the hook.
Okay, let's do offense then.
Let's do it. All right. And some of these made me laugh. I thought this was a good article. I thought you finally wrote a good article, dude. I was really excited for you. Man, dude. Yeah, dude. So this is what Ian wants to hear about Texas offense in spring practices. And he broke it down in these nice little quotes. Number one, Cole Hudson is finding – he wants to hear this. Number one, Cole Hudson is finding a great rhythm snapping the ball and looks like a natural at center.
And you
want to hear the specifics like that. You want to hear snapping the ball well, blah, 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 all that.
Yeah, I think that this team maximizes with Neto, Hudson, and Campbell as the interior. Mm-hmm. I think Robertson might be good too, but those other three are like the highest upside guys as far as we've been able to tell. And that does not work if Hudson can't play center. Getting Hudson on the field is easy, but you really want to hear that he's like, what makes him a good guard is translating and making him an awesome center.
Yeah.
And that's not at all a given, because at center, you got one hand tied behind your back, and it's just harder, obviously.
Yeah, literally one hand. And then the intelligence, right? Like, that's what we could really count on with Jake Majors. It's knowing where the run schemes go and all that kind of stuff. But your linchpin to this, your key cornerstone, is that you want to hear that Hudson is doing well at center, and in specific details of that, no vagaries.
Yeah, I don't want to hear, you might hear it's a good fight, because there's usually like some respect paid to the backup. But I want it to, like, every time Joe gets a look at practice, first team Hudson, until it's like that one week where you know they want to get Robertson some looks with the starters. But it's not like a back and forth, like, oh, we're not sure who it's going to be. I don't want to hear that.
No. And you kind of hit on it earlier, but Neto Umiazulu and DJ Campbell own the guard positions and are ready to go.
Same deal, mostly with Neto.
Right.
Is that when we've seen him, he looks like he might be a really good run blocker. But he was not a good enough run blocker to unseat Hayden Connor for the things that Connor was good at, like pass protection. So my nervousness would be whether or not Neto is actually a complete enough player, or if he's going to end up getting pushed, because he's got some flaw that's just like this. Look, dude, we can't be giving up free shots every time we throw the ball on Arch. I don't care if you're good at run blocking. I don't care if you're a god when you're pulling. You keep giving up free inside pressure. You can't play. So I'm not anticipating that, but I definitely don't want to hear anything like that.
Well, next practice is tomorrow, so we'll tell our little crew, hey, man, pay attention to – who's doing what on the offensive line.
I'll actually be there, looks like.
Oh, you're going tomorrow?
Yeah, I just got some coverage for a little one. So
Nice, dude. Yeah, should be solid. We got a lot of video clips yesterday. It's a good looking team, man. Just physically, man. We got some athletes. The next thing you do want to hear, Ryan Wingo is an unstoppable force of nature. And this will go back to you like very clear number one receivers, all of that kind of stuff, because of your theory that the outside receiver position is so crucial in college football.
Yeah, they need a dominant outside receiver, or else the deep shot post offense that Sark loves and that Arch seems so perfectly calibrated to run, it doesn't work without the deep threat receiver.
Yeah, because who cares if Arch can throw deep if you don't have that?
If he's not open, it doesn't matter. And then I always say, you know, in college football, the receiver makes the quarterback. Like, if you don't have guys that can be schemed to get open consistently, college quarterbacks never end up looking that good. And you see it all the time where, like, teams will have a great season. They'll return their quarterback the next year, and everybody's like, well, you know, the receivers got drafted, but the quarterback's back, and we all know that's what matters. And then that's not what matters, and the team is way worse the following season. You can't even tell you – can't even list how many times that's happened. But one time I listed on Twitter all the top returning quarterbacks in a given year and then how they did the year after that they had broken out. And it was just like universally worse, because the reason they'd broken out the year before was some receiver that was had been drafted or graduated. Now I do think Arch is an extremely good college quarterback. We'll get into that, but You gotta have the weapons, or it's just not going to materialize. And obviously, Wingo is the most likely outside weapon on the team.
Yeah. What do you think, Wingo? How does Wingo become an unstoppable force of nature to you? What does he need to grow this offseason?
Well, watching last year, you could tell that if he just got LASIK, he'd be good. That's all he needed.
Yeah, that was clear. It was purely vision-based issues.
Now, he was never – his releases were bad. A lot of times they dial up shots to him, and he would – the cornerback would jam him into a – he would have to take, like, an inside release, and Quinn was obviously looking for something outside. And you can never time those bombs if the receiver is not – where you expect him to be, because you're throwing to a spot on those. And if you throw to the spot and the receiver goes to a different spot, it's not going to be caught.
Yeah.
His releases were an obvious area for improvement. And I don't know. I'm better on results than I am on technique. I can tell you more what happened schematically than what happened technique wise, but better release, fight through. Like, you should not be getting jammed up when you're 6'2", 214, and that powerful. It just needs, like, the handwork to blow by.
It's a technique thing, yeah. Because a good corner can – it doesn't matter if you're 6'7", if they have better technique than you. So, yeah, he just needs the young technique. He probably didn't have to do too much in high school to get loose, man. They probably had corners playing 40 yards off of him.
He barely had to do that much even last year. Like, sometimes they throw him a screen and it looked like he looked like a slot. He was so nifty and fast on the outside.
Yeah. So, yeah, if he gets his releases, that's all just young wide receiver stuff. But if he can get loose down the field moving and Arch can hit him, sheesh. Do they have refs at spring practice? Yes, they do. All right. What Ian doesn't need to hear, he's not worried about particular facets of this team. For instance, he doesn't need to hear Arch Manning is the man on offense and is really coming into his own and dealing out there on the field. Well, here's where you're wrong, Ian, because that's a couple thousand views right there.
Okay.
That exact sentence can make you a rich man, Ian. But I agree. It's, you know, and you're going to hear 50 variations of that. because fans want to hear that too, right? Like, that's the nervous thing. You want to hear that your quarterback is going to be strong. But I agree with Ian that it's not as illustrative as it may seem at times.
It's been a long time since I was this not worried about quarterback at Texas.
Me too.
Like, Ellinger in 2020 was probably the last time I was this not worried. I think Manning is going to be extremely good. We've already seen him, you know?
Right.
Like, the Manning we saw last year was already one of the better, more talented quarterbacks in college football. If he played the whole year, that would have been really obvious. And now he's got a year with QB1 reps in an offense that's going to be more tailored to him. I was going to say, I knew this would come up on the show. I'd be like, I know that fans and the media, all they want to talk about is Arch. And I'm like, well, I'll talk about him. I think it's going to be really fun, but
it's one of the least like interesting things because it's, as close to a given as you have.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
But don't worry, we're gonna how they maximize them is interesting. And we'll get into that as the off season goes. I already got some scoop on that we're sitting on that I'm loving, but,
yeah, there's schematics that I definitely want to hear. How are they expanding the playbook? Is there more progression passing? Is he pulling the ball? You know, that kind of stuff is interesting with Arch. But as far as like needing reassurance that Arch is not a bust, like he's not going to be a bust, guys. Like, and Eric, if you read Eric's article yesterday, that was one of the most like positive articles I've heard Eric write on Arch. Like, Eric feels super good there too. So we have a bunch of people from different sources liking what they're seeing there.
The stuff that we heard about that they're planning for him is wild, Connor. Yeah. Wild stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff we have not seen at Texas before. Stuff I don't think I've seen in football before. I was looking for it after I heard about it, and I haven't yet to find what was described to me.
And, you know, we put some clips on the video yesterday of him passing, and it was pretty, you know, basic passing. There wasn't much to it, but he did have a pass to, I think, Livingstone in the corner of the end zone. It was a really nice ball. And I think Joe, one of our guys, reported that Sark like audibly was like, oh, okay. You know, so it's like Arch makes some throws. And we've also heard from practice reporting, not public, that Arch makes these throws every now and again that everybody's like, all right, we're going to be all right. I think the other one was to like some out he threw during a 7-on-7 that everybody was like, all right, we got a quarterback. So Ian does not need to hear that Arch Manning is a leader, Arch Manning is guiding the team, all that stuff. Not because it's not true, but because we feel like that's a given.
Yeah, we're already there.
Yep.
Oh, that's a controversial one.
Well, this one's funny. Jay said Arch Manning will be a bust, but in Canton, Ohio. So yeah. A little clever there. Before we keep going, do we see a more mobile quarterback than we've had in a while, or do we think we see Arch will attempt to be a pocket presence QB like yours? He's going to be more mobile.
Both.
Yeah.
And technically, pocket presence and yours are not like synonyms, you know?
Right. So here's what I think. Arch will be able to stand in the pocket longer and deliver more strikes than yours. So in that sense, he's more of a pocket quarterback because he's 6'4". And Ewers had this kind of flighty tendency, right, where he would just kind of get rattled and run into somebody. So I think he'll do better in that regard. But also, as far as being more mobile, he's literally more mobile. He moves better than Quinn. And then they'll have some design schemes where he'll move more than it would get called for Quinn. And then say something does go really bad in the pocket, he's going to have the ability to scramble a little more. I mean, we saw that. He did like, what, that 40-yard run early in the season. And then he did that one where he drew the defense and pitched it out to Bolden. So it's like those are examples of what Arch can do. But he will be able to stand stronger, like Jay says, in the pocket. So you'll see both technically. Ian's right. All right. Next, DeAndre Moore is coming into his own and is the most consistently open receiver on the team. Why do you not need to hear that?
Well, the reason I wrote was that a slot receiver with experience going against a team with question marks at nickel and coverage safety, shifting to more man coverage, it's like the slot is going to be open. That's the easiest position to get open. That's why I wrote that. And also, I think Moore is kind of a given, like Quint, like a arch. We know what we're going to get from DeAndre Moore. But as it was pointed out to me in the comments, the real reason I don't need to worry about hearing this is because DeAndre Moore is super limited this spring and may or may not participate at all.
Right.
So we will not be hearing much about DeAndre Moore if that is the case.
Yeah, he wasn't on the field yesterday. But Ian's just saying there, even if that were true, and it's because schematically he's going to have an advantage there.
And he's, yeah.
And he's a good player.
Mostly that. Also, he's a good player. He's obviously going to be good.
Yep. All right, guys, before we keep going, let's hear from Academy Sports and Outdoors.
Days like this, the anticipation's half the fun. The call to adventure. Possibilities in every direction.
Look at that.
The stories you'll bring back. Right. Even the true ones. And always, already, you can't wait until next time. From first catch to biggest catch of the season, this is where it starts. Academy Sports and Outdoors. Have fun out there.
Oh, yeah. AR asks, how close can this Texas offense get to the 20 Bama offense Sark had in terms of explosiveness and efficiency?
Is Ryan Wingo an unstoppable force of nature? Or can they get an unstoppable force? If they get an unstoppable force of nature in the transfer portal, then potentially. If not, then no. Like, they had Devontae Smith. That was – and Jalen Waddle at one point. It was crazy.
Yeah. Well, and how much of that matters to you that they had Najee Harris too? Because I know you're not always as keen on running backs, but how do you feel about that as adding to the weapon set?
Definitely some. I mean, Texas does not have an obvious Najee Harris right now. And Najee Harris is probably a little overrated. So, like, he's a big, tough running back, but.
Well, I think Sark maximized him.
Yeah. The Steelers got him. They're like, great. Just a hammer that we can get and blast teams with. And he's not done that much for the Steelers, although he's durable. And the Buckeyes hilariously watched 2020 Alabama film and said, if we can stop Najee Harris, we have a chance.
Yeah.
4-4 stack personnel.
I know, dude. They were getting linebackers lined up on. Oh, it was brutal. Even
Devontae Smith caught like 20 balls for 500 yards before they pulled him in the third quarter because he'd like tweaked something.
Some of that stuff was like when you first start learning defenses and listening to clinics, they're like, do not allow this to happen. And some of the stuff, like, I mean, some of the basic stuff, like, do not allow this matchup, do not allow this linebacker to end up on this slot receiver or whatever they were doing. It was cracking me up because I was like, this is like day one install of like, this is the weakness of this defense. Do not allow this to happen.
Dude, I was – because they announced Sark to Texas before the game. And so we're all going in like, hey, let's get some Sark content. He's about to put an audition for the whole world.
Yeah.
And everybody else was dutiful. Like, Sark geniusly carves up Ohio State, blah, blah, blah. But I just watched it, and I was like, I can't even talk about Sark. This man, Ryan Day, just ran the stupidest game.
Yep.
Sure, Sark will be good. It was a great season. But let me tell you how much of an idiot Ryan Day was.
It was brutal, man. It was making me laugh. 2026 is the year they may hit that efficiency if Arch comes back. Give the young guys another year to grow in the offense. That's how I'm feeling. I feel like this is another year before the year type of thing. I don't know how you match that efficiency. And AR's not asking that. He's like, how do you get close? But I don't know if you'll ever match that efficiency. We'll see.
If the receivers are awesome, they can get up there.
Yeah.
If not, they will not.
Good morning. Good morning, man. Okay, and then what you don't need to hear again is the running backs are getting healthy and coaches like the room, because we're firmly on the side of, like, we don't care if you like the room, get another one in the portal. So is that what's driving you? How do you feel about it?
You know, I do have maybe a caveat here.
Okay.
Which is that it's shocking how how much Christian Clark has recovered.
It is. Yeah. Everyone was saying he looked like they were shocked that how good he looked.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
How this is possible. Like, did he not rupture the Achilles all the way? Did he just tear it? Did his body superhumanly regrow the Achilles?
I think that's what it was.
Didn't that happen with like Adrian Peterson once, where his body just like regrew?
Just defies science.
Yeah, maybe there was something else going on there. I don't know. But did he like go to Mexico and get stem cells? I don't know.
Yeah.
But if Christian Clark can have like a real offseason of actually going for it, then that's, I don't know about Najee Harris, but I think he actually has big time talent.
I don't Christian really Clark,
anybody else.
He's my favorite running back in the room.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And then we saw CJ's still coming back, but CJ was listed as 230 on the roster, so we got a big back there. Gibson wasn't as big as I thought he was. He's like 206. Seeing pictures from last year, I thought he was like a 220 guy.
Maybe we didn't get into this on this show, but I cut up some of his runs from last year for an article. At first, I was shocked that he was as small as he was. Like, he's like a 5'10", maybe, 205. Which is a good compact build, but it's not like a big, it's not a battering ram. It's not Najee Harris, right?
Yeah.
And he was always so good about falling forward, right? Mm-hmm. But then I noticed, we did talk about this, I think. I noticed that if he got turned a little bit and somebody was able to hit him square, then he looked like a smaller running back. And he would lose the equation in the collision, you know. He would come out on the wrong side and get knocked back. So he's good. But
we'll hit David Keith Williams' question here, because I think he's a good example of like a wider comment I've seen. But so what, you're not interested in them getting healthy because of the depth of the room?
The only thing I'm interested in is Christian Clark actually like 100%?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll know if it's like, you know what, Christian Clark is actually going to be RB1. If we start hearing that.
That changes your vibe.
That changes it. Otherwise, I feel like I know what we're going to get from Wisner and Gibson. Wisner, I noticed, was listed at like 190 on the depth chart on the roster. If that's accurate, that's we wanted to see if he could get up. 210 or something.
Yeah.
He's actually lighter. So the name that they get out of the portal, or Clark is so healthy and so back that he's RB1 now. Those are the only two things that I'm really that interested in hearing. It sounds like Baxter is not going to be even able to really push it until the fall. So,
well, yeah.
Where there's nothing there until fall. Hopefully for his sake, he comes in the fall, he's like awesome. But
all right, so I've heard this comment. David Keith Williams, thanks for commenting, dude. I always appreciate your stuff. Trey Wisner rushed for 1,000 yards and caught 40 plus passes in 2024. I don't think that has ever happened in Texas football history. So I'm gonna use this as like a proxy to, we'll answer this, but I've seen this a bunch. Anytime we talk about the running back room, the response will be, we're neglecting Trey Wisner and we're neglecting what he did. And why are we even having conversations? And I'll even, you know, our sources are saying, hey, Gibson's the lead back. And even when we report that Gibson's the lead back, we'll also hear like, why would Gibson be the lead back? Because Wisner did all this. So what's the response to that? And also, Wisner, there's a cult of personality there because he's such a lovable guy. He's such a tough runner. He shows up when we were in a bind. So you have this also emotional connection on top of his production that he's able to have. So why do we discount Wisner sometimes as like returning as the number one starter? And why are our sources saying that Gibson's in the lead right now?
Because running backs are mostly the products of context, and Texas had a super senior NFL rich offensive line, NFL tight end and NFL outside receivers. And so he had a lot of running room, did Trey Wisner. I think the proof is in the pudding. He had, let's see here. He scored 5 touchdowns in the run game and 1 as a receiver last year. So when they needed him to be great in the goal, in the red zone, he was not anywhere near as productive. When they just needed somebody that could run through wide open lanes that the offense was generating, he was available. So he did it. So I don't really love like trying to downplay Wisner, because he was extremely tough. He's extremely versatile, and he's solid or straight up good at a ton of different things. And he like rescued Texas' season last year. So I love him as like a Longhorn going to go down for all he did last year. But he's just not one of the more talented running backs we've had. I've also been trying to do some quick. I was very skeptical of the only guy to run for 1,000 yards and catch 40 passes. I noticed that Hodges Mitchell came extremely close to matching that.
He came close, but did he do it?
He had 37 catches. Okay, and if he played in as many games as Wisner had as a result of the playoff, that's the other thing. He played in a lot of games. So, and who remembers Hodges Mitchell, you know?
So here's what I think can happen too with the 1,000-yard runner debate. So Sark's had one every year. So you can either – your mind will classify this as one of two things. I'll tell you what mine is after. But it'll immediately go to Sark – Trey Wisner is a 1,000-yard rusher. Sark has always had 1,000-yard rushers. Sark has generally had really good backs. Therefore, Trey Wisner is a really good back. That classification I'd be fine with. My classification is more schematic. Sark finds ways to generate 1,000-yard rushers no matter what schematically. So if you're a Sark's RB1, regardless if you're Najee Harris or X guy, you're generally going to get 1,000 yards. So that's kind of both ways to think about it. I tend to lean on the one that it's more dependent on the offensive line and or schematics. But when people – you could also argue that, you know, Sark's had good running backs, therefore that's how it works. That's how my brain takes it. All right, so that's the deal with Trey. There's no disrespect to Trey. We love Trey. But it's not just our opinions here too, right? We're hearing from sources around the program that Gibson's the lead back. That would lead us to indicate that we're not the only ones with that belief set. Cool.
If he were able to actually carry like 210 pounds or something, mm-hmm. and add more armor and still be as effective, then I would start to –
Well, how do you feel? I mean, like, even with Gibson, like, because we hear Gibson, I'm not super sold on Gibson as a lead back yet. I need to see more there. So it's like, to me, and I agree with that, I like Christian Clark the most, but that's all from high school huddle that I have that belief set. But I mean, Trey is like a solid number two in the rotation too, to me, is totally reasonable. I'm not saying Trey's not going to see the light of day or something like that. It's just, I would want him in the rotation, not necessarily like a third down back or anything like that.
Remember that year in like 2017 when Oklahoma had like 3 different 1,000-yard backs and they kept like getting hurt and the next guy would just, it was like Trey Sermon and it was Rodney Anderson and it was some other dude. And it was like whoever was in there was just killing and they all ended up at or near 1,000 yards.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be like that at Texas next year. I don't think the back is super going to matter with what they're doing.
Be honest, the middle of our line wasn't opening up holes. Even Bijan had to electric slide through the line. Yeah, but we were running predominantly outside zone this year, so it wasn't like they were having to pound guys. Like, you'd have to run flat with the line, and whoever got open, then you could just cut in. But that was the funniest part about Bijan and Rojo. Like, you know, I'd agree that, like, our – pure interior vertical run game has been weak in general, and like PFF and all of them would constantly put that, like, Bijan and Rojo, you know, lead the nation and missed tackles forced, like that was a good thing. That's a whole — you do not want that stat for your running back, because that means that your line is getting cooked and your running back is having to make everything happen. So you do not want your running back to be first in the nation in missed tackle force. So Eddie Kane was very correct on Bijan making it happen out there. All right.
They also, even in like, even with Bijan and Roshan, especially 2022, they had the duo game going in some of those games. Like they ran the ball, well, like 20 times in a row on Baylor, and they were not having to make that many people miss.
Yeah.
They're just mauling them.
Trey Wisner is a great running back, regardless of how underappreciated he may be. I honestly think he could be a reserve running back, and his production would exceed that of players ahead of them. He's a great talent, and he's a football player, man. Like, so like you'll see him in special teams. You'll see him all over. His mindset's important. What he did in high school, right? Going from running back to slot, not being ego driven by that, by getting, you know, having to switch positions because of another running back. Then he comes in, he plays crazy hard on special teams. You know, you see him run like the A&M game where he was just like making it happen. So yeah, I totally agree. And Trey is someone that you want to integrate because of that mindset. He's going to inspire other players and make them play harder.
For me, Wisner's going to go down with, like, Chris Obanaya.
Yeah.
It's, like, great Longhorns that I'll remember and appreciate for a long time.
Yeah.
That aren't necessarily, like, big-time NFL talents, but they were just, like, clutch in there when you needed it.
Barry, we're going to have Joe on at the end of the show. We're going to talk Pro Day, and we will definitely be talking about Barron. Pro Day is fun, man. It was packed house, too, man. We're in a different stratosphere now of talent. I mean, there were scouts everywhere, dude. All right, before we keep going, guys, let's hear a word from David McClellan.
I'm just going to say, guys, you probably need a fiduciary financial advisor, and I've got the guy for you. His name is David McClellan with Forum Financial. He works broadly and deeply with his clients as a financial life coach. And he should know something about coaching because he won several national championships as a swimmer for the University of Texas. He specializes in financial planning and has contributed numerous articles to Kipling on the topic of retirement tax bombs. So contact David today to be your fiduciary financial planner and schedule a one-hour consultation to assess your financial situations. The free consultation is available, so just give him a call. The number is 312-933-8823. That's 312-933-8823. His email is also in the description below.
All right. Still got running back talk, but we got to hit our marks, guys. We got to keep going. Is there a way Trey can up his game? We just want to see added weight, like Ian says, getting to like 210, being able to
run through contact a little more.
Yeah.
It's also like there are no diminishing returns on vision and pattern recognition when you're running through the hole. Like being able to see spatial reasoning, I imagine, improves as you get more reps at something. It's probably like quarterback, only on a much more reduced scale. So I think being able to make reads quickly and smart cuts and set up your cuts and set up linebackers to get you, I think all that kind of stuff can probably get better and better for a while before you really start to lose anything, assuming that the player has the reaction time and the twitchiness to actually do something with it.
But yeah. Trey got heart, and I'll take that anytime, any day. I agree with you 100% there. That's why I think you say you had 3 5-star NFL sure things. I think you still would force Trey into the lineup because he brings that caliber of intensity. All right. Things you do not want to hear. This is bad news. If you hear this, alarm bells of various sizes. So Ian does not want to hear Jordan Washington just needs to get into the playbook a little more and it'll come together. We are thin at tight end. We're going to definitely need one in the portal. And Jordan Washington is our big hope right now as a receiver. He's gained a lot of weight, which is good. And Jeff Banks is not playing around with him at practice.
Is it good?
I think he was. I thought he moved well in the clips of him taking routes that I have, and clearly they're working on his blocking. I also have some good clips of Jeff Banks on Jordan Washington like crazy. So And luckily there's no audio for you guys to hear in those clips, because he is on Jordan like he was on Jatavion. And, you know, if he messes up a blocking rep, do it again. And so he's on Jordan Washington in a way that, you know, that they know that Jordan Washington has to pan out this year. So they're going to be going hard on Jordan Washington. He's gained weight, which should help for blocking. But what Ian's saying is like, well, his primary strength is in the receiving game. So why are we weighing him down? But
he's 268 on the roster, man.
Yeah. And so he looks bigger. And it's not pure muscle 268 either. So I think you get his weight up and then you slim him down a little bit through fall. Okay.
I don't love it. I don't love it.
But why do you want to hear? You don't want to hear. He just needs to get in his playbook a little bit and it'll come together.
Yeah. Specifically with like routes, protection, whatever, run blocking. I just don't think they're going to rely on their tight ends the same way for run blocking this year. And it's just not realistic with this roster to lean on the tight ends and run blocking. So they'll just scheme around it, whatever. But if we're hearing like he's like struggling to be in the right spots or make the right adjustments, that's not great, because there's not anybody else.
Besides Magic Portal hero.
Besides Magic Portal, which they may get even if he is doing well, just because they need numbers. Or else it's like Nick Townsend, who I think if Nick Townsend was an early enrollee, would probably play. But because he's not, there's just so much they put on the tight end. They're probably, from what I can tell, they're probably not going to ask Jordan Washington to block that much this year, but they're still going to practice it really hard because someday he's going to need to be able to block. And it takes time to develop the skill.
And you see that in the clips. You know, he's not all
Sanders too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Jordan's not all there as a blocker. You can tell that just technique's not there. So he's kind of just like rushing the bag. Like he's putting his body on the bag, but there's not much technique going on yet. And so Banks is telling him to, hey, go rep it again. So I agree. I mean, truthfully, you want to maximize people's strengths, not try to bring up their weaknesses. So Jordan Washington undoubtedly is more of a threat in the pass game. That's why I can see the added weight can make you nervous. But it feels like that weight's going to go down. And like I said, man, from Western Montana State University, we need a seventh-year fullback that's just, you know, only likes to hit things with his helmet. That would make me happy, and that way those guys can.
What they went for in the portal last time was that Purdue guy who's more of a flex tight end.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they're looking for. He's actually not a blocker. They're just like, forget it. We're not going to be good at blocking a tight end this year. Let's go get a weapon.
You do not want to hear. They don't have one great receiver. They have a lot of guys who can get the job done. This is also, I agree with this, that if you have a bunch of guys, you have no guys type of thing. You want to hear very clearly that there's a standout. Now, you want to, of course, know that there's depth and your number two and three receiver can get it done, but it's generally a cop-out when you hear, quote-unquote, like the whole room's good.
Yeah. Last year, I heard that a lot in the preseason, and it started to make me really nervous. And it turned out that they did have one great receiver, but it didn't feel like the team even knew it until the freaking end of the year.
Correct, yeah. Yeah.
Like, you would not have watched Texas this year and been like, Matthew Golden's going to be a first-round pick.
Right.
He was, frankly, wildly underutilized last year.
Which is so strange, too, because, like, you saw him, like, us hit those corner red zone throws to him versus Michigan. You know, like, we saw it early. So it is weird that we didn't key in on him as the dead set guy until later in the year, because he flashed early, too.
Justin was telling me like mid-year, like after the Georgia loss, he's like, you know, if they would just throw it to Golden, he's always open.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they didn't. I don't know why.
Yeah. But you want to hear that there's a clear number one guy, and you want us to be right on who that number one guy is, right?
Yeah, ideally for Insight Tech. I mean, we want it to be Ryan Wingo, right?
Correct.
Or transfer, Magic Transfer X, or you know, Parker Livingstone, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. But, Joe, I see you back there. We're going to run through this stuff on defense, and then we'll bring you on for pro day. All right. What Ian wants to hear about defense. Let's do it. Oh, you've changed your format here. All right. What Ian does want to hear. Trey Moore is a lock to start at will linebacker. He's taking to it like a fish to water. Why do you want to hear that?
Well, they moved him to will linebacker. So hopefully it goes really well. They have a vision for what they could do with him if he's at will linebacker. And for his sake, he's like an NFL draft pick if he can play will linebacker. Mm-hmm. Just shows versatility. And he's like he's an awesome athlete for that position. But he's got to know where to fit in the run game. And that's really tricky, as we've seen with – how many times have we seen Texas recruit a kid out of high school that played like outside linebacker or something, like in a 3-4 or something, but he wasn't edge-sized, so they moved him to inside linebacker. And then it just took forever. Like, Malik Jefferson was the really big example. There's a couple other guys like that. And then Harold Perkins out at LSU is another huge example of that.
It's tough, man, because you're so close to the line, you have to react quickly. There's a lot of intelligence needed, especially now that everybody's like fake pulling and stuff like that. So they're even playing with your keys on top of that. So now you need to be like two levels smart, not just reading what you're seeing, but understanding that they could be tricking off of what you're seeing. And then on top of that, you need to be versatile, that you need to be able to drop back in the run game too, or a pass game too. So we think of linebackers as like these dummies that just like to hit. That you got to be a smart player to be a successful run back linebacker, and you also have to be mean. So yeah, there's a learning curve at that position. So I want to hear that too. I want to hear that he's really good in pass coverage, not dropping to flats, but you know, making quarterbacks throw the dig over him, that kind of stuff, far drops.
I'd love hearing that, but I am less worried about it.
Yeah,
especially if they end up ditching some of the match zone to just play man more like Aquino likes, it won't matter. So,
Justice Terry's athleticism is translating inside. Expect to see him on the field at least on third down.
Yeah, somebody that talented with that big of an investment put into them, just want as many early returns as possible.
And that tends to happen. I say that tends to happen in the Sark era.
Yeah. Yeah. They're really good about that. him being listed at 260 was surprising. I don't know if that's accurate. But
I don't know. You're no, it's inaccurate. I weighed it myself.
Well, I thought we had heard that he was like 290 recently. So well, I guess we'll see. He does not look 260 from what I've seen.
I'm going to go back in Instagram sleuth the workout pictures.
There you go.
Joe, when you're there tomorrow, your mission is to film Justice Terry. all right. A Trey Moore pick six would send me to the next dimension. Yeah, that'd be sick. All right. What we also want to hear, write this down, play of words. Jelani McDonald is going to be a star in 2025. I mean, Eric's reporting a couple weeks ago was that, hey, man, this guy has first-round talent, which is cool to hear. So we want to hear that Jelani McDonald is balling out, going to be a big-time player. I think fans agree. Everyone's in agreement there that he has special upside. And do you think that's going to be at the actual star position or at safety?
Probably the more things he can do, the better. If he's really a star, then that should mean that he's – it could mean two things. One, it could mean that he's like really good at covering space and diagnosing and tackling from anywhere on the field. Or it could mean he's like the next great Aquina guy who can like play man coverage one snap and stuff the run the next, like a Kenny Vaccaro or Michael Huff. That would be better because then you know he can play star in your set. And he's a high impact player. I would settle for... he's a freaking awesome player. But if he could play the star, that's better because I'm not sure who else will.
Yeah. What Ian does not need to hear. the D line is hard to move inside. Why is that?
This just should be a given. Like, we have film on Cole Brevard. He's hard to move. Check. Yeah. We have film on Travis Shaw. Travis Shaw is had conditioning issues at North Carolina, but when he would go in fresh, he wasn't getting shoved around.
And he's like 350 right now.
He's listed at 350, so big surprise. And Hero Canoe also. Hero Canoe was probably not as disruptive and explosive as they wanted at Ohio State. Probably why he was available. But he wasn't getting pushed around either. He was easily anchored. And then even January got snapped against Ohio State, and there was like a snap where he got double teamed and was able to hold the point. So we don't know what the upside of this group is, but I feel good that they're not going to get bullied. I don't really need to hear it because we've seen enough of it on film from all these transfers.
What Ian does not need to hear is the offense really struggles with the defensive pass rush, because that's going to be every team in college football when they play us. Because think about it. You got the Colin Simmons on the field. You're going to have Trey Moore at Will, Anthony Hill at Mike. You can even bring in Brad Spence for certain keys. You have Ethan Burke. Yeah, if you bring Justice Terry on the interior, if you do have Jelani McDonald, that star, you just have a million different ways to rush the passer from different angles, different body types, different levels of the defense. And then we might go into certain packages that are designed for that. So, yeah, the pass rush should be the strength of this defense. And if you hear that our offense is struggling with it, that's probably just proof of concept, and most teams will struggle with it.
Yeah, whenever they do like ones and twos or whatever, or even twos and twos and ones, you're going to be hearing like Trey Owens' head swimming. Arch had a tougher day today. It's just hard to find time. If you're not hearing that, then either the defense is going easy on him or the reports are going light on the offensive failures. Like this defense, if they go for it, they will wreck most any offense in a pass rush situation.
Yeah. What Ian does not want to hear, star, the nickel position is a committee. They have lots of guys who can play there. This is just the mirror of the wide receiver thought process, right?
Yeah. I still really – like there was some talk. Eric was like, you know, if they have – they can do play the matchups, that's great. Like play this guy in this matchup, play this guy in this matchup. But I think there's so much going on in the slot mentally. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like that's a position that you want to play by committee.
No, you want – yeah, I agree 100%.
And like when Texas has had packages before, it's been like they've still had like the guy that was really good there. But they like one of the first big nickels was Earl Thomas. They would play Earl Thomas in a big nickel. But it was like your nickel was either Aaron Williams, future NFL draft pick, or Earl Thomas.
Yeah.
And they were both like established dudes, and it was literally just about playing to matchups. It wasn't like we have this guy that's pretty good in these situations and this guy. It was like, which of our NFL players is going to be most effective here this week or in this down? So that makes me nervous. Can you pull up the question about – somebody asked if Wardell Mack is really 212 pounds or if it's a typo.
Yeah. Speaking of defense, is that a typo on Wardell Mack weighing 212 at nickel?
So he was the first team nickel at practice yesterday. And what I saw of him last year, he looked kind of thick last year. So I think it's actually plausible that he's 212, although you never know. We put a lot more thought in parsing the Texas roster for content and discussion than they put into actually putting it together. Like some of them are just like, They had one last year where like they had a Tavondre Sweat was like 600 pounds or something. I can't remember. It was like a typo.
Yeah.
So we're not sure, said, but I think it's possible that he's 212, and I think he could play nickel at 212. So we'll see.
Then the final one. Once they settle in on an identity, they could be great. I have one quick thing. We kept people kept saying last year, like, if Texas could just get an identity, if Texas could just figure out their identity, they would be good. Texas did have an identity last year. It just wasn't a good identity. It was that we could march up and down the field and we couldn't score in the red zone. So so not having a good identity doesn't mean you lack identity. It just means you have a bad identity. So what we want is a good identity. And we clearly have a lot of talent here. We recruited at the tops. We have a lot of national brand names. But none of that really matters unless it coalesces into something functional and effective. So you don't want to hear, if they figure it out, they could be great. We know that we have the raw materials there. We want to see that they're great because they're a power run team. They can throw it over the top. We can define them that concretely, right?
Yeah, and defensively, they need guys. Usually your identity on defense is a few versatile guys that can fit into a couple different roles so that they're always in a key position to stop whatever the offense does best.
Yeah.
So they really need like Jelani McDonald to be a piece that can always be where he's needed. And they need Trey Moore to work out, being able to slide back and forth between inside linebacker and edge. And I'd say those are probably the two biggest.
I would say last year, like on defense, we were dominant situationally, particularly in the run and short yardage, and then our pass defense. So it's like the ability to be situationally stout and a killer in pass defense was the strength of the defense. But you don't want to just hear, you know, they have Anthony Hill and Colin Simmons, therefore they should be good. You want to hear how they're being good, and that those pieces are maximized. Final thing, Ian, what do you think about Simmons weighing 238 pounds?
Nothing. All right, yeah. It was listed at like 245 last year. Who knows what he actually weighed? I don't have many questions or thoughts about Colin Simmons.
Besides, wow.
Yeah.
We're good, man. Colin Simmons, anywhere from like 235 to 250, like, all right. Because also it's like, well, can he hold up in the run game is what we're asking when he's lighter. It's like, dude, he's super aggressive. And then the run game too is like, yeah, if you're holding an edge, there's physical technique, but there's also like he can get around guys. And his effort is never lacking.
Yeah, Will Anderson played 4-eye at like 240 for Alabama. Guys like that are just in a different – they don't follow normal rules.
Correct. That's like – it's like trying to grade Patrick Mahomes with like a traditional quarterback rubric. If you graded him in the traditional quarterback rubric, he'd be doing X things wrong, yet
he's able Patrick Mahomes did like a workout video or something once where he had his shirt off.
Yeah.
And he was like, looked a little like bigger and softer in his upper body and his torso and his belly. People were like, Patrick Mahomes is fat. Patrick Mahomes is slow. Or like, how is he going to play quarterback like that? And it's like, what? The way he has for the last.
Exactly.
Thing, he's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. All right.
Luka Doncic. Can you imagine if somebody thought, I don't know if Luka Doncic is going to be good because he looks a little softer.
Yeah, who could? Yeah, who would ever think that, dude? Great. Someone, wonderful.
Someone really dumb.
Yeah, would be very dumb and definitely heartbreaking to a whole Metroplex. Guess what?
Joe.
There he is. Joe Cook, the man. Joe, you were at Pro Day yesterday. There was about a million people there when I was watching it on SEC. It looked like a packed house. How was the environment, man? It seems, I mean, just from a couple of years ago, it seems like Texas is back in the spotlight for real.
I used to dread Pro Day because it used to be a long day where you had about 10 guys going through warmups and you were hoping one of them was a third rounder. For many of the years I've been doing this since, I think, what was my first Pro Day? Probably the one after Charlie was fired and Herman was hired. So I don't even think they got anybody drafted. No. They had Deontay, so they had that. But, like, it used to stink. And it'd be a long day. You're in the bubble, which is the bubble. And now, you know, even 4 years ago after the 2021 season in 2022, it stunk. Now it's fun. You have head coaches there. You have recognizable assistant coaches, GMs. You have 20 guys going through drills, and you have all different sorts of stories. You have Quinn throwing to try to be one of the first quarterbacks taken outside the first round, most likely. You've got, you know, Golden and Barron still doing drills, Banks still doing drills, despite probably being a first rounder. And then you've got guys like, you know, Helm making the most of his opportunity after twisting his ankle at the combine, and someone like Silas Bolden, Gavin Holmes, who didn't get to go to the combine, putting some good numbers up. Jaden Blue, Isaiah Bond, you know, all the different guys who are there. You get to hear a little bit about everything. And yeah, it's fun. I take that back because, you know, SEC Network's kind of a new thing for us right now, but you wouldn't think very often that this would be must-see TV. It'd be a DVR thing and check back later. But
yeah,
it was a lot of fun. Learned some good info about guys and what they thought about their time at Texas, and a little bit too about what they think about the future as well.
Joe, I have a couple questions. Connor, I'll intersperse them. First question, is there any truth to the rumor that Justin Wells yelled "pull" before every Arch Manning deep shot attempt?
No, I don't think that. Arch or Quinn?
Quinn.
No. I think you had everybody pretty locked in on watching that. And I saw the clip NFL pulled. There were some throws that fluttered a little bit that weren't super duper tight spirals, but he looked good. You know, he did all the good stuff that you'd expect to see from him in the intermediate, in the close range, you know, hitting guys here. Juan Davis had a one-handed grab that made up for like one of the few errant throws. And he did fine on the deep passes. Like that's what you wanted to see from him. Did fine on the move. You know, it's funny. You never really think about this, but the pro ball and the college ball are different. The pro ball is fatter and shorter, I think. They've been training with pro balls, obviously, since they declared for the NFL. But it's, you know, some subsequent things. And RT is going to write about this too. This is kind of everybody's last time to compete in burnt orange. You know, they're going to be donning new uniforms by the next time they're starting to play football. So it was cool to see that. Would it have been nice to talk to Quinn? Sure. Is it a big deal? No. And now, you know, he breaks into that second round range. I know it's an odd place to take a quarterback because of cap things and contractual things, but I don't think there's anything that he did yesterday that would make his draft stock go down.
Definitely not. Whenever I was watching it, it was a pretty long workout, which I was impressed by. So they had a lot of them, like you said, short and intermediate, which we know Quinn is good at. We know throws to the flats. We know he's good at there. He's throwing to all different types, right? He's throwing to tight ends, wide receivers, running backs. So you're dealing with different body types, heights, and speeds, and he's still hitting them all in the right spots there. The deep passing was okay. Like we said, there was some times it would hang up and there's a couple misses there, but also that's deep passing. Like a good deep passer is anywhere from 40 to 50% in a game. So it's like, yeah, most of the time it's not going to complete anyways. So I didn't think that, you know, you would walk away and be like, the deep ball issues are solved. I think, you know, right, you're getting with Quinn, that he can hit you short and intermediate, protect him in the pocket, move the pocket, those kind of things, like a San Francisco or whatever, everybody's talking about the Rams, that kind of stuff. I think if you know what you're getting in Quinn, you just were able to confirm that's what I'm getting.
Pro day to me, and even you can kind of apply this to high school 7-on-7 and college 7-on-7 at a certain point. It's a way to confirm priors. Like, you're not going to learn any new good news, because if you look good at your pro day, that means you've been taking care of yourself since the season ended. You've been working hard. You've been trying to make sure that when it is time for your test, that you're ready. And unless you go out and drop, I'll say this, maybe you can. Jaden Blue said he had a groin issue at the combine. And so he came out and people were clocking him at like 4.24, 4.28, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you can do good at your pro day. But for the most part, I feel like it's a way to confirm priors and to make sure that these guys just didn't quit doing anything or didn't get bad advice. And there have been some Longhorns at their pro day who got bad advice and it tanked their draft stock to where they went undrafted. But what we saw from Quinn, and I feel like what we saw from pretty much everybody else, confirmed priors and a lot of, you know, obviously good priors. They're going to go by what they see off the field, off the tape. But to see Quinn come out and, you know, look good, look, you know, what was he? I know some people marked down 50 for 59 on throws. That's good on air. And some of those were dropped by Blue and Bond, and I'm not trying to harp on them, but that was the case. Right. But you know, he did everything he needed to make sure that any head coach, whether it was Aaron Glenn, Mike Vrabel, D'Amico Ryans, Kellen Moore, anybody who saw him didn't come away thinking less of him from the pro day.
Yeah, absolutely. And you got another one loaded up.
Were you able to hide the tears when Quinn ignored your requests for questions and raced off to do allegedly a meeting with another with a team?
I said this on Inside Texas, and I know I've said it on here before, in that I got to couch this with, like, no one cares about sports writer problems.
Right. It's a losing proposition to, like, go. Yeah.
It's like, if I worked at Dell, I don't care that marketing at HP is having a problem.
Yeah.
You know, that's their office. So, like, no one cares about our office problems. And
yeah.
I guess that's how you describe it. But Quinn showed up every time he was asked to. He answered questions. You never heard a bad word about Texas from his mouth. Were his answers, like, sometimes milquetoast? Sure. And as I'm writing a story, would I like for Quinn to maybe give me something? Yeah, but that doesn't say anything about Quinn. It's the Marshawn Lynch part of it all. It's like, you have parts of your job you don't like. And, you know, there's no reason to be directly insulted that Quinn Ewers doesn't really love talking to the media. And of course, you know, would it have been cool to hear from him after his pro day? Sure, but he had apparently more important things to do. And hey, that's his job. I'm not going to knock him for it.
I kind of liked his media appearances. One time before 2022, I asked him why, before 2023, I asked him why it had been so hard to connect with Xavier Worthy deep all year. And you could tell he was kind of thinking, like, what's the best way to. He's like, yeah, I don't know. I guess I got too excited, too much adrenaline or something. And that was it.
Well, yeah. And there was levels to it. Like, you could tell, like, there were some pressers where, you know, he was not excited to be there. Never rude, never any of that. You could just temperamentally, you could tell he wasn't in a great mood about meeting. But then there's other times, like before the Cotton Bowl, he was the most laid back I've ever seen him. Maybe because he knew he was coming to the end of having to talk to the media.
Yeah.
But he was super smooth, engaging, and fun too. So it's also just it hurts our feelings as media. But maybe he's just having a bad Monday too. Like, we might be reading into stuff a little too much, you know.
Well, he's also just, like, super chill and an internal processor. Yeah.
He's a quiet guy.
Don't make for, like, a Charles Barkley level quotes.
Right.
But yeah, I thought he was always pretty good in the media. He didn't say anything that ever damaged himself or the university.
Right. Correct. And he could have, because there was a lot of landmine narratives that were constantly, you know, he could step on, you know. So it's like, I also understand, like, the paranoia of Quinn, because everyone's waiting for him to say something about Arch. Is he tired? Does he not, you know? So it's like, he also knows that, like, he's going to end up on the front page of ESPN at any moment. If he stubs his toe. So it's like, you kind of get this paranoid, quiet version. Because it's Texas, man. You know how they twist everything that comes out of those media availabilities. What did you see from the big guys, offensive line, defensive line?
I think that Kelvin Banks kind of confirmed everything that we knew about him. That's kind of a fun day for media, because it's, you talk a little bit, and, you know, you're not covering the guys very much anymore. That's kind of the last thing you're covering them with. So you kind of get to talking, and I think we all remember Tommy Yarish, who worked he works for the Cowboys media apparatus now. And we were kind of asking him, like, where do you think this guard stuff comes from? And it's like, well, one guy said it. And then, you know, they look at his Texas measurements of 6'4 and don't believe it. And even after he measures in at like, you know, 6'4.5", 6'5" at the combine, whatever. It's like,
that's what drove me nuts is they were saying it was his measurements. He had better measurements than the LSU tackle.
Right.
And they still continued with this narrative. And so I'm like, yeah, you guys are weird.
I really wish Cam Williams would have been able to go through. I think he's still recovering with his knee. But he said he's up to 330 now. And he went to the combine at 317. That was an eye opener for me because, you know, this is someone who was 360, maybe 370 at certain points of his Texas career. And he slimmed all the way down to 317 for the combine. He's up to 330. I think he's excited to get through. Alfred Collins had a boot on his foot. We didn't get an explanation why. Vernon Broughton also said the reason he couldn't do much at the combine is because he had a quad injury. So he got to do good stuff in showcase, I think, today. The guy who I thought, and I saw Barry Sorrell was here in the comments, as he always is, and it was good to hear him supporting Barron. Barron looked great. You know, sometimes you forget what shoulder pads can make in a helmet can change an appearance, but Sorrell looked awesome. He talked about and something that we're very familiar with, that jack roll prepares you for multiple different things in multiple defenses because of its hybridization. He thought he did a great job at the Senior Bowl, as we know he did, and he looked physically fantastic. Like, I think the best traps I've ever seen were Malik Jefferson's, and I think Barron Sorrell gave him a run for his money. So that was the big ones on the from the big boys.
Hey, y'all, check out the combine numbers on Kelvin Banks. 6'5", 315, 33.5-inch arms, 5'1", 6'40", 179 10-yard split, 32-inch vertical, 4.66 shuttle.
Proven production at the college level.
There is some team out there that's just like delighted with how quiet he is. I bet he goes higher than people think. Like
he's a top 10 pick. It kind of depends on what the Bears do. I feel
that's like what I'm saying. It's like either he goes from top 10 to like 25th.
Yeah.
Weird like middle ground.
But here, I mean, I think Texans GM Nick Caserio is there. That's a team that desperately needs offensive line help.
Yeah.
You know, everybody is saying the Bears are going to take an offensive lineman for Caleb. And then after that, I'm sure some team may think to trade up to get him and put him in the top 15 or something like that. But he's a first rounder for sure after today.
You know what I was surprised? Jahdae Barron. I'm starting to get protectionist where I'm like, dude, you don't got to do nothing, man. What are you doing at the pro day? Go kiss babies, dude. You know, like, but he's still competing.
Oh, he had time for that. Don't worry.
But it's like, because, he'll crush in any political aspect, too. And so it's like – but that's where the thing, too, I'm just like you said, you can't really show up at a pro day and really – unless you run like a 4 flat. That's the only thing that's going to change. Really, you can only kind of hurt yourself at pro days. So, like, with those – I was surprised to see Golden, hey, I'm going to do a full receiver workouts, hey, all these things. Because those guys at the top, Banks, all that kind of stuff, there's really only something to lose at these pro days.
I think with Golden – you know, everybody, how do I want to start this sentence? Travis is going top 5, and we'll see whatever happens with him position-wise by whoever takes him, I feel like. But I bet Golden ran and did stuff, or at least ran routes to try to be wide receiver 1.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that means a couple more million dollars, man. It is important. You can gain, you can lose. But I just – You talked about why he's always open. And you talk about when you draw routes on paper, you use straight angles. And, man, he was running them with straight angles. It was impressive to see and impressive to see him haul in a bunch of different stuff. The guys that I was – but I think we knew what we were getting from him. We were really, you know, for guys like Silas Bolden, even Mo Blackwell, Bill Norton, like those guys didn't get their chance in Indianapolis. And Bill Norton slimmed down a lot. He played pretty heavy during the 2024 season. Obviously, a lot of these guys slim down or get more athletic, whatever you want to say, to go through the combine better. He put up some good numbers, I felt like. And, you know, there aren't a ton of 6'5", 330 guys walking the face of the earth. So who knows what he gets an opportunity to do. Silas Bolden looked great. Like, he showcased his burst. He caught punts for teams. Y'all remember Trendon Holiday from LSU from way back in the day? Like, I wonder if maybe Bolden could do something like that and be a return specialist in the NFL.
Yeah, well, how bottom of the class, how did Benda look?
Benda looked good. His 40 time was good. I think he did really well in position drills. RT Young is going to have a good bit more on him. Been tracking that pre-draft process pretty closely. He put up good numbers in the bench. I'm trying to look through the thread at the same time as I'm going through this. But bench press, let's see if I can get the scroll in first. He had 18 reps on the bench. I think he had a good broad jump, if I can find, from RT or Evan. But, you know, all these guys had good athleticism was never something in doubt when it came to Benda. It was always one of his great traits.
Yeah, and Blackwell, was it a broad jump or a vertical that Blackwell had a really nice
explosion? Blackwell, let me see if I can find it. Blackwell had a really good vertical. I think it was up there in like the 30, maybe even 38 range.
Well, that's
maybe not 38. That's too much. But like it was mid 30s. So all the guys who needed to do well in testing physically for what their tape may have lacked did just that on Tuesday.
Yeah, that's what I think is important too about having all these top guys is that you're able to draw the whole NFL and they get to see the bottom of not even the bottom of the roster. These are all NFL potential guys, but the bottom of the potential draftees, you get them shine too, which I think is important. How does it work politically, Joe, whenever you see how everything works, like how much hobnobbing is going on? Are scouts over there talking to players? How does this work off camera at a pro day?
So you have the GMs, you have the head coaches, but there are assistant coaches there. Terry Joseph was there. Bo Davis was there. Both those guys representing the Saints. So that was pretty interesting. They're, of course, talking to, you know, Sark or they're talking. Terry Joseph's a unique case. He knows what he's looking at when he's watching Jadae Barron. But they're, you know, all these coaches. Chuck Pagano was there for the Ravens, the old Colts head coach. So they come and talk to Sark or the position coach, maybe get a couple more notes. Most of these guys have their representation there. So those guys are doing their job, selling their clients and saying, you know, what to come talk about and, you know, giving that. But it's a little reunion-y. I remember when I was walking out, I overheard one of the head coaches there go like, "All right, see you in Columbus on Friday," or something like that. Yeah. So, you know, they're going to go to Ohio State and see that. But, you know, obviously a lot more formal interaction happens well before this day. You know, they'll call the coaches. They'll call the assistant coaches. Heck, I remember if our guy, Dane Brugler from The Athletic, he'll put stuff in from like high school. So I know NFL teams, you know, remember they're investing tens of millions of dollars in these guys. They'll go as far back to like a high school head coach to ask about habits then and things like that. But I feel like at the pro timing day, it's mostly about like, you know, "Oh, did you see that? Hey, what number did you get? You know, this is my stopwatch. What did you think about that?" It's not like state secrets are being passed around from all those guys on the field.
Cool. And you got any final questions? Are you good?
I'm good.
All right. Joe, thanks for coming on, teaching us about Pro Day. We will have Inside Texas Basketball coming in a couple hours. This evening, we will also have Wednesday Night Live with LC hosting. So y'all tune in. And then tomorrow morning is practice again?
Yes.
Cool. Yeah. So we will be covering practice as well tomorrow. It's going to be a lot going on this week, guys. So make sure you stay tuned to the channel. You're going to have a ton of, stay locked
in. Landscape videos, Ian.
Yeah, landscape videos. We're going to see what's up with Justice Terry when we're looking for him. All right, chat, thank you guys. You guys did great today. There was a lot of good stuff in the chat. Joe, thank you. Ian, thank you. And have a great day, y'all. Peace.